Blog Talk Radio.
Well, happy Good Friday, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, I guess it's happy. It's happy, but it's the precursor to something wonderful. So we get through, don't we? You are listening to Jesus for the Rest of Us. I'm your host, Ellen Hartwell, and we have quite a show coming up here. So without further ado, you know I love to say that, without further ado, it is my privilege and honor to introduce you to my dear friend, my mentor, one of the most intelligent men I've ever known. He knows, I can't believe all the stuff he knows. He's very smart. And he's also so easy to talk to. He's real. He's intuitive. He's genuine. He tells it like it is with love. And that's why he's my best male friend, John Morin. How are you today?
I am terrific. Well, I'm usually pretty good when we're doing the show. I like the show. I'm good. I like the metaphysical. I like discussing Easter from a metaphysical standpoint, and this is what we're going to do. So I'm happy about that. Or at least this is what I'm going to do, and you're going to do you, and we're going to do it together. And there you go.
You go.
Good.
I'm so glad. You know, you're right. From a metaphysical point of view, that is how I want to talk about this. Most of you know the story of Jesus. He was crucified. He died. He was buried. And then he's resurrected. We know the story. Now, is it true? I think so. But it doesn't matter whether you think so or whether you don't think so or whether you're not sure or you don't know. None of that matters. And I think people have a hard time with that, John. What do you mean it doesn't matter? Well, it doesn't because the more you incorporate the story of Easter weekend, the more it'll change you. And maybe you'll start believing it and maybe you won't. But let's quickly go through the steps. So we have Good Friday. He was crucified. Horrible, terrible way to die. And I'm not going to start crying, I promise. But so we have the fear, the terror, the pain, the suffering. That's Friday. And then he releases to death. Into thy hands I commit my spirit, he was allegedly said, and I believe that. And so he's saying to God, take it over because I'm leaving this body. I'm not so happy now. It's time for me to go. So he's dead. He's on the cross. He's dead. This guy named Joseph of Arimathea, I'm probably not pronouncing that right, who is a wealthy man, and he was actually a Pharisee, but he was also a hidden disciple of Christ. And he says to Pontius Pilate, I want to bury him. And Pontius Pilate says, okay, take him away. So he does, and he had a tomb. This Joseph had a tomb, and so he put Jesus in there, and the stone is rolled in front of the cave, because that was the tomb. And the story, right? No. So we have the sadness, the terror, the pain, the suffering. And then Jesus' body is removed from the cross and buried. And then we have silence. Silence. There's nothing. It is completely quiet. All of Saturday. All Saturday, and we're pretending this happened Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It doesn't matter if it was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But for this story, so he's buried. He's dead. He's gone. There's a big stone in front of the cave in which he was buried, and it is quiet, ladies and gentlemen, silent. And then the next day, Easter Sunday, or Wednesday, or Friday, doesn't matter. But for this story, Easter Sunday, an angel, woot, woot, comes down from heaven. There's a huge earthquake, and the stone, this great big boulder, is rolled away from his tomb. And Jesus comes out of the tomb. And wait a minute, how could he do that? He was dead. Well, because he was resurrected. He was returned to life. Now, we can talk about all that happened after that, and Mary Magdalene seeing him and not recognizing him until he spoke, and then she knew who he was, and he was seen many, many times after that by his disciples and other people. We can talk about that sometime if you wish. But the sequence is he was actually tortured to death. Then he died, he was buried, and then there's silence, and then on Sunday he's resurrected, he is returned to life. Now, from a metaphysical point of view, ladies and gentlemen, when we are manifesting, we may have pain and terror and fear. What if this doesn't work? What if I can't do this? What if I'm reaching too much? What if I'm believing in this big thing I'm manifesting or this little thing, and it doesn't happen? And, oh, my gosh, how scary is that? And then we have a silence, a quiet. And hopefully we're doing our affirmations and we're believing and visualizing and putting our emotion into it and all that. But there's a silence. Most of us don't manifest immediately. So there's this silence, this quiet. And it's not necessarily a bad quiet or a good quiet. It's kind of neutral. It's like, okay, I've done my affirmations, yada, yada. And now there's a silence. I'm not seeing anything happening here. And you start to wonder, I'm going to keep my affirmations going and my visualizations, and I'm going to pray and meditate and whatever I do, visualize, etc. And in that silence, if you really listen to that quiet, you'll feel creation happening. Creation usually isn't very loud. It's quiet. It's silent. Something's cooking, good looking. Something's simmering on that back burner. And we start to get a sense of that, whatever visualization works for you. And we start to know, yeah, you know what? Something is happening here. I may not know how or what, but I know my word cannot return to me void. Therefore, something's simmering. Something's cooking. Something's moving. Something's creating. And then, boom, there's your manifestation. Now, it might be a breadcrumb to your manifestation, but things start happening, and you start having a lot more faith in the ability you've always had. You've been resurrected, returned to life, returned to your faith that you do co-create your own reality. Now, this isn't easy. Nobody said this was going to be easy. Nobody said this was going to be a cakewalk. It isn't. To go from, I don't know if I believe, to, yeah, I kind of believe, I sort of believe, maybe I do get a sense something's happening. And then you get your manifestation or a breadcrumb leading to that manifestation. You're like, oh, wow, holy fish cakes, Batman. I do co-create. I can co-create. I am co-creating. So if you look at the Easter story, and I know that's a very simplified view, but I don't have all day here, and I want John to talk. But if you look at it from that point of view, Friday, then Saturday, then Sunday, as you manifest, you have this anticipation, this, I'm expecting this to happen. And wait a minute, I don't have so many blockages. That stone is rolled away. I'm starting to believe that I can do this. And then you're returned to life. You're resurrected. Every time you manifest something, it increases your faith. It increases your anticipation and expectation. The God of your understanding is working on your behalf no matter how dark and dismal and horrible it's been. You are returned to that life, your faith, your belief that yes, I can, and yes, I am. And so as you look at that story and plug yourself into it in some way, you'll see that the whole story of Easter is all about you and all about me. And yes, for me, all about the God of my understanding. But it is for you, those dark nights of the soul where, ugh, and then, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? I feel so alone. And then there's the silence. And then there's the manifestation or the breadcrumbs to it, and you're resurrected. So that is my take. That is a different perspective on the Easter weekend. And so, John, what do you have to say to that? Do you agree, disagree, what?
Oh, I agree with most of it. I mean, I think what's interesting about this, between you and I having these conversations, Alan, is, you know, it's the perspective. Our perspectives are slightly different. They're not hugely different, meaning, overall, I mean, I think that is the whole point of the holiday. I mean, I can break it down from the long lens and just say, like, look, Easter is about three words and three words only. Life goes on. And what I mean that by that, you know, I mean that literally, and it doesn't even matter if you're an atheist and you just believe that something came from nothing and over zillions of uncounted trillion years, life evolved and, you know, doesn't, you know, whether it's an insect or a dog or a human or, you know, whatever it is, that life does in fact go on. And I think that's what, to me, what this weekend, and I actually think the thing that elevates it, Ellen, what this weekend represents to me, and Christmas similar, represents to me is just very simply that what you are doing, I think Jesus is saying, what you are doing is we are doing all of this, and I'm aware of it. And, you know, and if you believe that he's the Son of God, he could have just sort of, I don't know, floated off to India. He could have said, you know, Judas, you know, and gone and lived in an ashram and, like, meditated for the rest of his days. I'm the Son of God. I don't have to do this. And because I honestly think that's something that's left out. He willingly submitted to, let's be clear, it's not like he's the only, you know, there are three people being crucified. Like, he's with two other people. But people are crucified all the time. Like, and Friday, I think it's placed on Friday before sunset because it would have been the Sabbath, the Jewish Sabbath, you know. And, you know, these people, you know, they need to, because what you're doing, and it's not even necessary. I mean, obviously it's an execution, but it's not a beheading. It's not like we know he's dead because his head's not on anymore. It is, you know, you bleed out. Well, first you bleed out and essentially you suffocate. Your body can't hold itself up. Whenever you see the plays and, you know, these things recreated, the actor has, you know, a thing on his feet that keep his feet up, like, you know, there, and the fake nail in the feet. But Jesus wouldn't have that. Like, you sink down and you essentially suffocate, is how you die in this case, if you don't bleed out first. And but most people apparently suffocated. And so it is torturous. It is probably 3 hours of hellishness, you know, once you get to the point where you're being nailed down. It is, you know, it's anywhere from probably, I've read about it, it's an hour to 3 hours until you die, most people. So it is 3 hours of straight-up agony and pain. But people are crucified all the time. It's not, this is a normal, and in fact, in Saudi Arabia, people are still crucified, which is appalling, but it is true. It is a form of execution that is still happening on earth today. And having said all that, I think that what Jesus is doing, though, if you accept that he has these other, you know, you can say Son of God, I would say elevated metaphysical powers. He's so very connected to who he is that he does miracles in his ministry. If you accept all that, then you certainly could, if you can believe that he can demonstrate fishes and loaves and turn water into wine, you can believe that after they finish dinner on Thursday night, the Last Supper, that he could have manifested his way out of there. Like, Judas is going to betray me, but you 11 get me the hell out of town. Like, that could have happened. He chose not to have it happen. Because it wasn't like he was, you know, had a mansion to sell and, you know, and he had to sort of give his landlord 30 days notice. He didn't have a lot. He could have just left. He chose to die on purpose. And I think, Ellen, show that. And I love, you just accented something that I've never really thought about. And then there is a day and I kind of believe this stuff, lived to be true. And I will say point blank on this show and any show, like I think I read the Bible entirely metaphorically, and there are times when I believe that there are things, there's obviously historical connections, but it is a really important book when you, and helpful book when you read it as metaphor and instruction. And, you know, if you take the word Lord and turn it into law and just use all that, you know, and, you know, what is this indicating I should do? It becomes a really powerful, and it's scripture in that case. If it's literal, if you read it literally, it becomes like, well, I mean, that's just crazy. God is mean, and this doesn't make any sense, and that contradicts that, and, you know, it becomes a mess. I happen to believe this stuff happened, and that's less important to me in the conversation right now. But let's say there is a Saturday, there's a day. Friday makes sense because it would have been before the Sabbath, and sort of Pontius Pilate is throwing a finger at the Jews. This guy's allegedly the king of the Jews, and he's throwing a middle finger. Well, I hope he dies before sundown, or you're going to have to leave him up there, because they would have had to leave him up there. And so he dies at noon, is traditionally what people believe. And he's taken away. And I love what you emphasized, Ellen, I was getting to it, is there's this silence, there's this gap, there's this, I don't know, I would say mind the gap. There is this moment in all growth, and I believe this, all spiritual growth, where there, and we talked about like 40 days in the desert before, but this is almost more subtle than that, where it is absolutely, if you're a nihilist, you would call it the void, where there is this, you're sitting in the absolute silence, and it feels like nothing is there. And very often we miss that moment because we manifest the $20, or we suddenly, like, we're working, you know, we're doing this, and then boom, it happens. But, you know, it may happen in our sleep, but it's a really important part of the creative process personally. Mm-hmm. And I want to say, to bring it to the next day, and I have a lot to say about this in this hour at some point, you know, to the next day, which is whether it's literally true or not, and I'm going to say this, I'm going to testify, I believe that it is, in this case, literally true, but it doesn't matter if you do. Take the metaphor for, no, this thing that you and I call death, which I have chosen to demonstrate for you in the way that it is demonstrated today, is not factually true. It is not any spiritual person with their soul. It isn't metaphysics, you know. Even Buddhism, which has the most sort of nothing is happening here thing, talks about past lives and future lives and karma being paid off. And anybody, Abraham Hicks says, don't worry, you're never finished and you're never done. Like, you know, you have plenty of time. It will keep happening. You will keep experiencing this. The goal isn't to figure out a way to not be afraid of death. The goal is to elevate yourself to the point that when you have that moment, that you can say, great, this thing called John Warren, this person called Ellen Hartwell, this thing called Jesus of Nazareth, great, it is done. I am done. I get it, and I'm going to keep going, and I am wide awake. And so what I'm going to do is, I don't know, who knows what he did. He went to the green room for a day, but he didn't die. His body died. And his body died, and we had to participate in the illusion. And it's 36 hours or whatever. Say he dies on Tuesday, I mean, Friday at noon, and you know, the tomb is opened on, let's say, sunrise on Sunday morning. So 36 hours later, you know, there he is. Most important thing about this, and we can talk about the reality, we can talk about what I think it means, I can talk about physics and how physics and the tomb sort of reflect each other, and the importance of women finding him, which I think is very important in this story. But the most important thing is to say what we're celebrating here with eggs, and eggs are life, is life goes on. Easter eggs are life. That's where life comes from. Rabbits are customarily all about you know what, procreation. You know, they rabbits make a lot of rabbits if they're left on to their own devices. It's all about life. It's springtime. It's about this. Life goes on. And in this case, Jesus is making it personal to him. And so it is personal to you. Your life goes on. Do I think I'm going to be called John Warren in my next life? No. But the thing, the essence of me continues even after I shut off this particular mortal coil. And I'll finally reach my ideal weight. And but no, I think the bottom line is, Ellen, I think the story of Easter is to say, here's the lesson of it. And if you believe it's about somebody deciding to kill themselves so that your soul is saved, I'm not going to judge. Well, I am personally going to judge that. I am human and I do that. But what I'm going to say is, I absolutely make space for you to believe that, and I would defend and honor that space. For me, it is not, nobody died for my sins. God does not need to die for me and to save me. God died to show me that there is no death. And I can go, thank you. I can praise that and say, praise Jesus, and I mean it, for showing us that you can conquer this thing. No, it's not even conquering. It's going to happen anyway, that you can be conscious of it. You can choose it. You know, I'm not saying suicide, but you can be conscious of it and then go, wait a minute, but this is an illusion. The death here that you're witnessing it's an illusion that you will cease to exist. You're not going to cease to exist. You're going to keep existing. I think that's the story of Easter. And you tell me what you think, Ellen. It's a little untraditional.
No, I have a lot that I think, John. And by the way, you are listening to Jesus for the Rest of Us here on Blog Talk Radio. We appreciate you listening. If you'd like to contact us, it's easy. Go to my website, ellenhartwell.com. John and I are there. We always welcome comments, criticism, show ideas, whatever you have to say. Let it rip. Let us know, and we will give every communication our consideration. So thank you for that, ellenhartwell.com. Now, John, as far as did Jesus die for my sins, this is dicey. And if you believe he did, God bless you. I'd never argue you out of that. You have a right to believe what you believe so long as you are not hurting yourself or anybody else. That's my opinion on that. I do not think, and we're going to talk a lot about this next week, what was the real sacrifice is next week's show. But I do not believe he died for my sins, sins or mistakes. I believe that God forgives me all the time. I don't think that he had to kill his only begotten son or some guru or you or me or anyone else because we're already loved past anything we can understand, and love is forgiving. Therefore, do I think Jesus died for my sins? No, I agree with you. He died so that people would know that, you know, there's no victory. Death does not have victory. It just does not. Your physical being will die, yes. But who you are, your essence, that God's thumbprint on you is eternal. Energy can be transformed but not destroyed. You are energy. You are love. You are light. And that cannot be destroyed. It just can't. Scientifically, it can't. And Jesus was a rebel. And Jesus was crucified because he was a rebel. And Jesus also was crucified so that he could rise up again and say, na 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 nu nu, you're not going to die. Your body's going to die. But who you are cannot ever die. You are an eternal being. Now, when you get to the other side, is it, hey, Johnny, how you doing? Or, hey, Ellen, how you doing? Not in that sense, but I do think we'll recognize each other's energy. We will know each other. Why? Because we're all connected. There is only one. There can be only one. Yes, as John taught me, there's diversity. But we are one thing, and that one thing cannot be destroyed. And so when Jesus went to, and I don't want to go into this too much because that's next week's show, but when Jesus went to the cross, he was telling you and telling me and anybody else who would listen that, no, you don't die. Your body dies, but the rest of you does not. And when Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and the stone had been rolled away, she went there to put herbs and spices and whatever around him to take care of any odor, frankly. And he wasn't there. She's like, wait a minute. He's not there. How could that be? And there was a gardener nearby, and she said, sir, do you know what they did with Jesus' body? Where is he? She's all upset. And the gardener says, Mary. And she falls to her knees and says, Rabboni, Rabbi. Now, she didn't recognize his form, but she certainly recognized his voice. We know the sound of God. We know God's voice. Now, it may not be in words, it may be nudges and feelings and signs and wonders, but we know that which is God. How do we know that? Because that's where we came from. Do you remember Main Street in your hometown? Of course you do. Okay. Well, we don't forget what God is like. We don't forget the sound of God's voice, his teachings, his nudgings, his love. We might believe we're separate from that, another big fat lie, but when we hear it, when we experience it, we know, I'm experiencing it right now as we talk about this, that beautiful presence, that holy presence, that presence that loves me, period, not comma, not semicolon, not but, period, just like he loves John and you, anybody listening. So that loving presence, that forgiving presence, that complete acceptance of who I am as a person with all of my warts and whistles and foibles and character flaws and whatever else, he, she, it, loves me, period. And that love is what Jesus manifested. God loves me, meaning Jesus, so much. I'm not dead. My body's dead, but I'm not dead. See, I'm right here. And that's what happens to you, and that's what happens to me. When Jesus died, he said, into thy hands I commend my spirit, not my body, my spirit. And if you are awake as you're passing and you remember that, you're going back to spirit from whence you came. But I do not believe we're dissolved and we don't know anything. I believe that we are conscious and we keep growing and learning and growing and learning. And so, did Jesus die for my sins? No, that means God is mean. God is a nasty, manipulative, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth God. And I don't believe in that God. That is not the God of my understanding. Why would God kill his son or his daughter or any, why would, I mean, that means that he's a mean, horrible, vindictive, revengeful God. I don't believe in that God. If you do, God bless you, that's fine. You're allowed to believe what you believe, and I'm allowed to believe what I believe, but I don't believe in a God who hates and who divides. I believe in a God who loves and unifies. And that Mary went to the tomb and Jesus wasn't there. It's like, whoa, what the here? She ran back and told the disciples, he's not here. His body is gone. But I saw him and I talked to him, and they go, yeah, honey. Have you had too much wine? And Mary says, no, I'm telling you what I heard and saw. I know. He lives. He is risen. And they're like, honey, maybe I know you're grieving, and maybe you need to just chill for a little bit because he's dead. But they go to the tomb, and the stone is rolled away, and only his burial linens are there. The body is gone. Jesus is not there. What does that tell you? That tells you from a metaphysical perspective that we can die 1,000 times during this life alone, die to our dreams, die to our partner, die to our hopes, die to our manifestations. But I am telling you, once you walk down this road of metaphysics, you can only play dead. You can't be dead. It'll come back around and kick you in your royal behind and say, keep at it, keep at it. Here's a breadcrumb. There's a breadcrumb. Keep at it, because once we know, we can't unknow what we know. And so when you look at the events of Easter weekend and the horror of it and the fear of it and the terror of it, I've known fear and terror, haven't you? I've known despair and disappointment and, oh, my God, horrible things. But I also know that in the midst of those long, dark nights of the soul, there's life. And dang it, I'll find the good. Dang it, I'll find the life. And what do you know? I'm up on my feet again. And so we need to remember that. Jesus elevated women. At the time that Jesus lived, when he walked the earth, women were cattle. Women were meant for two things, and you know what I mean. And so women were not revered. I'm not saying there weren't husbands who didn't revere their wives. I'm sure they were. But women didn't have any rights. Women were just there for procreation and to cook and clean and serve their husband in whatever way. That's what they were there for. They were not elevated. But Jesus said, oh, no, 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 you got it all wrong. They are human, and they are valuable. And he was very close with Mary Magdalene. He told her things. He taught her things. And she went on after his death to teach Jesus' teachings. A woman, that was unheard of in those days. But she did. And so Jesus allowing Mary Magdalene to see her first was a great honor to women. Don't forget that, ladies. Don't forget that. So, John, do I think he died for my sins? No. No, because I think I'm already forgiven because God loves me that much. I don't think he had to do in Jesus to prove that. So did I answer your question?
Well, yeah, and then some, because you're good.
because I blather this, on and on.
Well, I'll see that and up it. You said the smartest thing I think on this show yet so far, Ellen. You can play dead. That's what you're doing, but you're not dead. And isn't that the truth? I mean, like, oh my goodness, I think that may be. It's like, oh, no, you think you're dead. You can play dead, but once you – and it, by the way, even when you don't know, it may seem like – and this is why I think expanding consciousness – and this is a huge part of it. This Easter stuff is a huge part of it in whatever way. And by the way, Judaism celebrates this. I don't – I believe that there is an equivalent in Islam, but I don't know what it is. I think it's Eid, but there's a celebration of liberation. Let's put it that way. In most major religions, and in Jesus, the day before, is having a Passover Seder. That's what the Last Supper is. And Passover, as you know, is the celebration of the Jews being liberated from bondage, slavery in Egypt. And in many ways, Jesus is saying, very good, now I'm going to up the ante and say, you're not only that, you're liberated from death. That is the story of – the Passover story is a real story, probably. But it's also a symbolic story of everybody's life. You know, eventually you're liberated from your own darkness, from your own enslavement, eventually. And the enslavement, the Egyptians, no offense to real Egyptians, but the darkness is, you know, is your own, the trappings of your own consciousness, the trappings of your own mind, the trappings of your own belief system is what you are parting the seas, Moses, and Jesus is parting the seas of death and saying, just walk through it. It's just nonsense. That's not really there. That water is not a problem to get you to the promised land, which is you. You are your promised land. And I mean that in the broadest sense, in a way that I don't even understand. When I say you are your promised land, I don't mean that you look in the mirror and go, yay, rah, rah, I can do it today. I'm going to get that raise. I'm not talking about that you. I'm talking about the grandest you that you and I probably don't even understand. But the biggest part of you, the part of you that's going to keep happening is where you're going. And, yeah, whether it's crossing the Red Sea or it's Holy Saturday where it looks like God literally, the Messiah, has died, and it's like, oh, this was all a joke. Like, he that was crazy. It must have been a trick, that 3 years that he wandered and told us those things. It must have been BS, and then it's not BS. And, I mean, that's one thing. I think it's really important. You know, I just love, you can, well, yeah, you can play dead. And, you know, and I would say, here's a lesson for Easter. This is when I become, you know, head the Church of John, and I'm the Pope of it. This is my Easter sermon. I'll come out in Pope Square, Vatican Square, and say, you can play dead, but you're only playing, and then I'll go back in. That's the point. The whole thing is stop playing dead. Like, don't think you're dead. Stop playing dead. Unless you choose to, in which case, you're just going to be annoying. And because once you know, you know, and keep expanding. And, you know, the last song, Ellen, I'm just all over the map, but I love being all over the map. That's what this stuff does in my brain. I probably thought, you know, I thought about this kind of stuff, metaphysics, especially around the religion I grew up in, and politics, to be blunt, more than I've thought about anything in my life. And so I can ramble on and on about it. We're not talking politics, so we'll stick to this. And I will say, the point of staying aware, and I believe that the week that I guess Catholics and Anglicans, most people call Holy Week this week, is sort of a, you know, it's a distillation of life. You know, you enter Jerusalem in with fanfare, and you do stuff for a while, and then things get ugly by Wednesday, which in Catholic, I think in the end, it's called Spy Wednesday. It's the moment where Judas decides, like, something's up. I don't know. I think I'm going to turn on this guy. And then, you know, the beauty of Thursday, Holy Thursday or Monday Thursday, is twofold, because I think it's an important part of the sequence of events here. It is Jesus invites everybody to do, well, they're going to have their Passover Seder, I think. It's a Passover Seder. They're going to, you know, sit down and break bread, the disciples and him. And he says, you know, look, I'm not going to be here for much longer. And by the way, conscious, you know, he's on a level of consciousness where he's aware of it. And I don't think he got wind of it. I think he's genuinely aware that, like, the point of my story is going to come to a climax soon, meaning this weekend. And he does. He says that. And so let's break this. It's almost a toast to himself, you know, and says, you know, remember me in this. He knows, and they're like, just do the Passover. Like, that, he doesn't do the Passover stuff. I've been to Passover Seders, and he doesn't say the right words. But he says, you know, eat this in remembrance of me. Drink this in remembrance of me. Stay connected to me. This is our union. We are all one. We are connected. And by the way, one of you is going to betray me, and here's how it's going to go. And he explains the whole thing. Now, why is that important? Also, I'll backtrack really quickly and say, as was customary, when someone answered, the servants would wash your feet. Like in Japanese homes, you will often, you know, in many cultures, you take your shoes off before you come in. You don't bring the dirt. You don't bring the outside crap in. And in this case, it wasn't a servant that washes the disciples' feet. It's Jesus. And you people, you know, in Catholic and Orthodox traditions and Anglican and many Protestant traditions, you know, the priest washes the feet. I am your servant is what he's saying. And then they rise and they go to dinner. And he says, you know, be in communion with me because I'm not going to be here much longer and somebody's going to betray me and here's how it's going to go. And why I think that's important, Ellen, is because I think it is important because he's conscious of the entire series of events, because he's saying, I'm aware of this. I know what's going to happen. And I am doing this I'm doing this because I love you and because I want you to see that this is nonsense. And when it's all over, as is always true with metaphysics, y'all are going to have to teach it. You're going to go out, usually two by two, and you're going to have to teach it. And you're going to teach it. And some of them got it closer to right than others, I think, of those 12 people and Mary, who went out and taught it, and Paul later, and everybody else. But he's aware of what's going to happen. He even says, here's how it's going to happen. Somebody sitting here is going to turn on me, and there's going to be a cock, and the cock's going to crow, and, you know, I'm aware of all of it. And when he says it is done, what he means is, I knew this was going to happen. It is all done. And, Ellen, I'll just say this. I don't think Jesus died for my sins. I do not think it's a helpful ideology. What I do think is important, and where I can get a hold of it, is if you come from the West, what you and I do come from, original sin is sort of baked into the cake. And if you need Jesus to have died for your sins, in quotes, to get rid of that, if Jesus is the new Adam, and, you know, if you believe that Adam, that God made two people and then immediately said, you're canceled because you bit into an apple, which just seems crazy to me, that's not the point of that story, which you can talk about at some other time. But if you believe that, or it's baked in and you can't get around that because of Catholic guilt or whatever, then yes, use the Jesus death story to get rid of it, to blot it out, to say, nope, it's all done, forgiven, we are starting over right now. I am saved by this. This person decided to sacrifice themselves to save me. If it's helpful, then use it. Absolutely use that. And but I think what I love about this stuff, other than it's Easter and it's springtime and eggs and life goes on, is how conscious he is and how much he is walking into his own firing squad and saying calmly, like, look, this is what's going to happen. And he doesn't say, you're going to find me, but up until his death, he says, like, it's the last time we're going to eat. I want you to take this in remembrance of me. First of all, I'm your servant. I'm going to wash your feet. And then we're going to do this other stuff. And he's totally awake and alive, and I think it's all love, Ellen. I really do. You know, the foot washing, the feeding, it's all symbolic of the ritual that they would have known well and him updating it. It's all an act of love, and he's saying, I know who's going to betray me, but I don't think, unless I've misread all of these Bibles this many years, he doesn't say, and you are stinky poo-poo Judas, you're the one, I hate you. It's all love. And it's all like, none of this matters. You're forgiven for all of it. We did the best that we could do, and I've done my job, and now I'm going to exit, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to show you this is all pretend. And in my next little rant on this show, I'll connect it to a couple of other things that I haven't thought about in a while. But I will say, all love. And the reason why I say that is the last song, this is me, I'm just flying around the map of Western civilization. The last song the Beatles sing as a group is called The End. And the last lyric in that song is, and in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. Meaning, I am crossing over conscious. I am conscious. In the end, the love you make is equal to the love you take. I am going back to God with love. Not with fear, not with panic, not with, oh my God, I'm being annihilated, but with love. And so the next thing that happens has to be based on what I come in with. And when you go to Epcot, Ellen, and when I go to Epcot, you know what we're going to get? We're going to get the level of consciousness we have when we exit. And Jesus is conscious the entire week, the entire week. And I love that. I absolutely love it. I think it's such a smart, beautiful, it's what rises this story above so many other stories in religions that I deeply admire and appreciate. And there, that's the end of that. Love. Love is the answer.
Beautiful, John. It's just beautiful. Just beautiful. You are listening to Jesus for the Rest of Us here on Metaphysical Hors d'oeuvres. If you'd like to get in touch with me or John, go to our website, ellenhartwell.com. We would love to hear from you. Next week's show is, what was the real sacrifice? So, Yes, John, it's a beautiful story of life and rebirth and spring and bunnies doing what bunnies do and eggs being, I mean, those were all pagan symbols for fertility and procreation, yes. So that's why we do all that. But it is rebirth, it is life eternal, it is life everlasting. And when Jesus said to the disciples at their Passover dinner, he said, I won't be here much longer. Remember me with the bread and the wine, and one of you will betray me. And the disciples are like, who? Are you going to betray him? No, I'm not going to betray him. Of course not. Blah, 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 blah. And Peter says to Jesus, I would never betray you. And he says, before the cock crows three times, you will have betrayed me, which turned out to be true because he didn't want to be crucified. He didn't want to be killed for his association with Jesus. So he said, no, I don't know him. Let us not say we don't know him. And by that I mean, don't pretend that you don't believe in a higher power. I don't care what you call that higher power, source, spirit, universe, Allah. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. But it should matter to you. Do you have a relationship with the God of your understanding or gods? Do you talk to the God of your understanding? Do you have communion with him or her or it? Because God is genderless. Jesus was a man. But God itself is neither male nor female. God is an energy, a creative force. God is love. God is light. Da, 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 da. We can go on forever on that. But God itself is genderless. Jesus was a man, yes, but God itself is genderless. So why did Jesus come as a man then? Why did that happen? Because there is no way in God's green earth that a woman would have been taken seriously. Jesus ended up being taken seriously. And he said, greater things than I will you do. He said that to his disciples, greater things than I will you do. And they did. They went on with the signs and wonders and miracles and teachings and healings and talking about Jesus' message. They went on and did that. And people are still doing it today. We're doing it right now. So remember within yourself that no matter what you believe, as long as you believe in something that animates you, empowers you, that you co-create your own reality with, as long as it gives you life, because God is not death. God is life, and life eternally, life everlasting. God is not a meanie with a long white beard up there in the sky going, I saw you did that. I heard you say that. And boy, are you going to pay for that. The opposite, yeah, I saw it. I heard it. I love you, period. And that Jesus knew what was going to happen, and he faced it, and he dealt with it, and he went through with it because of love, because of light, because he wanted you, and me, and John, and everybody, he wanted you to know that you need not have fear of death. It's a temporary moment when your body goes. The rest of you goes on, and he proved it. And, oh, by the way, I do believe in the resurrection. I absolutely do. I believe that he was dead, and then people talked to him and saw him, and I don't mean a ghost. He broke bread with people. He talked with people. He was in his new body. And will we get a new body? I believe we do. Now, I don't know what that's like, but I believe that when we go to Epcot or heaven or the other side of the veil, whatever you believe, do we have a sense of body, a sense of who we are? Yes. And the biggest moment when Jesus said all that, like, I'm not going to be here long, do this in remembrance of me, da-da-da-da, was an expansion of consciousness such as we have never seen. I know what's going to happen, and I also know what's going to happen after. I will live. His consciousness was so expanded that he was able to incorporate a mystery. We can't understand that, really, but he did. And he proved it. And so as we expand our consciousness, even at the moment of our death, to say, yep, I'm leaving. Love you guys. See you later. But boy, am I going on to something fabulous That's why we celebrate people's lives. Yes, we miss people who have passed on, and we are sad and we grieve. But we also know, if we exercise our faith muscle a bit, that what they've gone on to is so spectacular and so blissful and wonderful and joyful that we can't even imagine. And I contend that we keep on learning and growing and expanding consciousness on the other side as well. So, John, Easter weekend is a fabulous metaphysical event and to me, a fabulous human experience event. We've got about 10 minutes left, so go ahead. Keep going, John. I know I kind of interrupted you there.
No, you did not. No, I was tired. My mouth's a little parched. You know, it's Good Friday. I'm fasting. No, I actually didn't fast. Oh, well. Ellen, I think, you know, we hit this, and I mean, I can boil down Christmas and take it from any number of traditions, from Hanukkah to Christmas, and I'm sure that there are others in other traditions, but it's about, in the darkest part of the year, in the Northern Hemisphere anyway, where most people live, you know, there's a light, a baby will come. And there will be light. Life is here. Do not be lost. Your candles will last through the winter for 8 days, even though they're not supposed to. You have enough oil. And that is God speaking. You know, that is the thing we call life speaking to us. And Easter boils down to, it boils down to life goes on. It's the, you know, it's the second part of that, which is life goes on. And, I will say, if you're of the scientific mind and you sort of like this time of year, like this holiday, what I will say, and I agree, by the way, I agree with everything she said about, Ellen said about women, and the upshot being that, by the way, I'm talking to you, Pope, and any other, and the Orthodox, and any other tradition would say, it's like, stop demeaning women. Women, clearly, the person that you worship as the Son of God valued women equally to men, and they should be allowed to be ministers and priests, so knock it off. There, I said it. Boom. Boom, I said it. Now, moving on to physics, I will say, if you know anything about physics, a fundamental law of physics, and by the way, we believe in science on this show. We are not anti-science, and science is wildly helpful. Illnesses I've had have been fixed and helped by science. God or manifestation happens through scientists and through doctors and through life happens, period. And antibiotics came through a person, which came through God. Thank you very much, God and that person. Physics is reliant on a fundamental principle called the superposition, which is before the thing, the energy that becomes matter, is either a particle or a wave. It is both, and it is can be in any place, can be in any number of places at once. It's the superposition, and it's in the superposition until when it is measured. It is seen. Measured, it doesn't mean like you take a measuring stick. I mean, it made Einstein crazy, but essentially the science of it is, if I'm not looking at the moon isn't there. Now, someone else is looking at the moon, so the moon is likely there. The moon is being, in quotes, measured. I'm looking at my desktop computer right now. But if I'm not and no one else is, in theory, it's not there. And this is true of matter, of physics. Until something's measured, it is a particle and it is a wave. And it can be on that side of the universe and on this side of the universe at the same time. But the moment it is seen, it becomes something. It collapses into something. I contend that it is that moment that Mary is so important, that when she, before she walks into that tomb, she's actually in the superposition. She is unconsciously hoping that this person is dead, is not dead, and that he has resurrected and he's come back. He's done what he did, what he's shown he can do with other people, because Jesus resurrects, what's his name? I forget his name.
Lazarus.
Lazarus, thank you. She's hoping that either consciously or unconsciously, and she's representing all of us in that moment, whether you are a Christian or not, in that we go from punishing God to open, loving, expansive, forgiving God, and we go from having to pay off things in a damnation of hell if we've done things wrong to a place of first we forgive and then we see what you need to do to rectify. We have grace. And this is a pivot point in human history, at least in the West, what I mean is the Christian side of the world, or the Judeo, you know what I mean by the West, not the Orient, the Occident is the old way of putting it. It's a pivot point because in that moment, just before Mary looks and sees that the body is not there, which means he's alive, and is she's in a superposition, and she has collapsed by seeing, then measuring that moment into, we're going to do something bigger now in human history. We're going to expand. We're going to get bigger. We're going to believe in a higher thing, that life is eternal and goes on. And they're not just eternal truths, but you and I are eternal as well, because it's demonstrated in this moment. I hope that made sense. So if you are in the superposition where you can believe or not believe, collapse into the thing that believes. I hope that makes sense. It's a little bit of a stretch, but it's not a huge stretch to say, like, look, if you are going to measure your life, do it with faith and belief. Just try it with the belief that the thing that is most truly you, your essence, is in fact eternal. Start from that the next time you decide you want to manifest something, or the next time you're in pain or suffering over something, or the next time you have to wipe your grandfather's bum. Start from that, and you don't like it. You're tired of how long he's living. Start from that moment. You are eternal. You are forever. And see how it feels different. And that's the huge gift of Easter to me, Ellen. That's the massive gift, is like, oh, we're eternal. And you know what? It seems like that would trigger my procrastination. Because, oh, if I have all the time, if I have eternity to do my taxes, then I can wait. But no, it actually makes every moment, it does the opposite. It makes every moment an implication of forever, and it also gives it a grace and a beauty that just wasn't there before. So, yeah, you're measuring it. How you look at your life, you're in a superposition at all times, and open your eyes and go, okay, I've decided on eternity, on life eternal. And in that, and that's, by the way, how Jesus does save us, by showing us that. And, yeah, that's my take on it, and that's why I think Easter's just lovely, a lovely holiday. And, you know, you're right. I mean, we've taken all the pagan, we take the pagan stuff from Christmas too, the bringing the tree indoors and the Yule log and all of that stuff. And the pagans aren't wrong. You know, I mean, that's, you know, being pro-life in the most basic sense of like, oh yeah, babies are good. Puppies are good. Like, chicks are good. Like, we love new life. New life is good. And by the way, life is eternal. End of rant. I hope there's 2 minutes. There you go.
Yeah. Well, and I agree, John. I don't pretend to understand all that fully, but I do understand that life is eternal. And if you've ever talked to anybody or read anything about near-death experiences, there's something more. And that something more, in my opinion, is life eternal. And so we go on, and Jesus proved it. And so as you look at that, it does. It intensifies the now. I don't think Jesus died for my sins. I feel that he redeemed, showed me and you and everybody how to redeem the time. Because, no, I am here for a very short period of time. However, my life, the essence of me, is eternal, and so I need to redeem the time whenever I can. I need to pay attention to what I'm saying, what I'm doing. Am I being kind? Am I being honest? Am I being straight? forward, what am I doing? Because each moment has a clarity and a wonder to it when you know that this is temporary, but I am eternal. If there's a message from Easter, that sure is one of them. Do not be afraid of your death and live your life to its fullest. Jesus was 33 years old when he... And we need to remember that life is short, but life is wonderful. Use it. You are an eternal being. And oh, by the way, happy Easter. And oh, by the way, get closer to the God of your understanding today.